Will a joint meeting of the House and Senate Resources Committees please come together or come to order? With the concurrence of the House co-chairs, I will chair the meeting. Thank you both. We have present Representatives Harris, Morgan, Kapsner, Cowdery, Hudson, and Matzik as the co-chairs, and we also have Senators Lincoln, Senator Kelly, Senator Green, Senator Taylor, and myself, and we are here for a presentation on the Rural Summit on Intensive Game Management Unit, which was held in McGrath several weeks ago. I think it's appropriate to start with the department. There was some communication questions on who could speak for the department, but Wayne Regland is here as the head of what I call the Game Division, what they call Wildlife Conservation. Wayne, could you come and join us? We were trying to reach the commissioner, and we made that effort late and were initially looking for the staff from the area, but Wayne can probably at least give us a status report on what the department's position is on the current situation, particularly in Unit 19 McGrath area.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I basically came to listen because I didn't realize he wanted me on the agenda, but I also came because Toby Boudreau, our area biologist in McGrath, was asked to plug in by teleconference, and I asked, told Toby that I'd cover it for him, that, you know, it was my job to work on this, and I would try to cover this, and I thought I could present the same information that he could have. We feel that we have a very low moose population in McGrath. We have some figures that that show that the moose population has declined quite significantly since the early 90s. We did a moose census in 1996 out in the area that we call 19D East, and our estimate there is that in 1996 there were about 1,900 moose. This is an extrapolated estimate or a calculated estimate based on an actual count of 764 moose in an 1,819 square mile area. And then we extrapolated it to the 5,100 square mile area that where wolf control has been authorized. We repeated this estimate in 1999 and came up with an estimated moose population of 1,400. I think it's 1,301 to 1,400. The actual count of moose that we was 563 in a slightly larger area. It was an area of 2,072 square miles. We included another river drainage based on some of our work with movements of moose. So we feel that in the last 3 years, the moose population has decreased from about 1,900 to 2,000 moose down to 1,300 to 1,400.
So you got a 25% reduction in 3 years or something there, about 25
yes.
or 30%?
Before that, we don't have any real good estimates of censuses in the area, but based on the information from long-time area biologists that worked in the McGrath for many years, they feel that this area had a significant amount more moose, maybe, you know, in the range of 4,000 moose. It could be plus or minus there, but it was probably significantly higher than the 2,000 moose we counted in 1996 or estimated.
So the real difference is something like 4,000 in prior years down to 1,300 currently?
Well, you know, that's our best estimates. If you want to talk about just the hard science, then you have to talk about the censuses that we did in 1996 and 1999. But I think the other thing that we always take into account when we try to manage wildlife populations is that the local people are out there every day and they know a lot about it. And they know that the population has declined significantly, too.
Do you do a sex and age composition, cows to calves to bulls in that area?
Yes, we do.
What are the last 3 years of those counts? Or ratios, I would say.
I didn't bring the estimates with me, but we're getting low survival of calves in the area. I know that the last time we did it, it was 22% or 22 calves per 100 cows. It's not, you know, down there at rock bottom, but it's where you're not going to see a population increase. You can, at that, and I don't have the most current years or the historical data there.
I want to apologize to Senators Ward and Hoffman for not recognizing them when I started. They were at the other table, but we're glad to have you.
We also have estimates of the wolf populations in the area. We did a population estimate for wolves there in 1995, and we counted our estimate was 160 wolves. When you put a 90% confidence interval around that, it was plus or minus 30%. It's counting wolves is not an extremely precise thing, but we've method. But we feel pretty comfortable with saying there's about 100. There was about 160 wolves there in 1995. In 1997, in the same area, we repeated that survey and only counted 56 wolves.
You counted 56.
Or I mean, we estimated 56. Excuse me. Now I don't know. We haven't made an estimate of the wolves there in 98 or 99. It's the local people feel that the population is significantly higher than 56. We know that last year, in 1998, there were caribou in the area. It's very rare. In the last 50 years, they've probably, the Mulchatna caribou herd has moved into that area twice. But they've moved in there last year. That probably gave the wolf population a shot in the arm. And we haven't made a census in that area. We moved our efforts into adjacent game management unit areas rather than to repeat the counts in 19D. I have one area biologist in that area, covers a big piece of country. So we don't have estimates since 97 on the wolves. But we know that we have a serious problem there with predation.
Would you describe the process you use to count wolves and estimate total population?
Mr. Chairman, we use two different ways. The way that it was done in not both 95 and 97 in the McGrath area is a new transect method that we have used where you fly straight line transects across different parts from one area point to another that are randomly chosen. You observe the wolf tracks and you measure the distance back to that where you saw that wolf track. We've tested that extensively in areas where we felt we knew how many wolves were there from intensive research projects where we have all the wolves collared, the wolf packs collared, and we feel that it gives us a pretty good estimate. The other way we do it, and the way we've done it for many years until we've found this new technique that's probably a little bit, it's more scientifically defensible and probably a little bit cheaper, but the way we also can do it is after a fresh snow, we go out and find the packs, backtrack, either find the wolves or look for the tracks as they spread out on the areas. And you can get a pretty good estimate of the wolf population that way, too. But in the McGrath area, we use this new line transect method.
How many hours of flying were involved in the 97 count? Just a guesstimate.
I know that they used four airplanes for a period of 4 days, but I don't know the exact number of hours they were in the air. We try to do it all in a very short time period with lots of airplanes to minimize the movement of the wolves.
Senator Kelly had a question, and Senator Taylor had a question.
your wolf-to-moose ratio, what do you think is healthy for that area, and what do you think it is now?
Well, in 1996, we estimated it to be 13 moose per wolf. It's not quite that bad right now because there are probably fewer wolves, but that is a moose-to-wolf ratio that's going to continue to drive the population to a lower level.
Do you, when you had the historic high levels of 4,000, was it at that time the same?
We don't have any. In those days, there were no estimates of the number of wolves, scientific censuses made or estimates, but talking with the area biologists that worked in that area for many years, you know, they thought there were probably about 150 wolves in the area, but what you had three times the number of moose.
Now, on your predictions, too, you're extrapolating the 1,900 moose in 96 and then 1,400 in 1999. This winter was a horrible winter as far as moose are concerned. And do you expect their decline to... Is there going to be a jump in the decline of moose because of this winter and heavy snows and the rains on top of that?
Right now, that's a possibility. Right now, the snowpack is averages. I talked to Toby this morning about 33 inches. They've had 75 inches of snow this winter. They didn't have any snow until after the 1st of January, so it's snowed maybe around Christmas, but in early December, mid-December, there was no snow in the ground. So they've had 75 inches. There's a slight crust on the snow. Most of the time, if you have about 28 inches of snow, moose can handle that pretty good based on our work from other areas. But it all depends. If there's a heavy crust, then that makes a big difference. So I don't know how extensive the crust is, and right now is the time that you would start seeing, you know, more wolf kills. The moose have been pushed down, and they're mostly in the riparian areas and pretty vulnerable.
What kind of predator control has been done in this area in the last 5 years?
Mr. Chairman, there has been no wolf control in the area. There's been extensive efforts made by the local residents to increase their trapping efforts, and they've done a pretty good job of made a big effort. But it's very difficult country to trap because there's not a lot of trails. The access is along rivers. It's rugged country, and it's heavily timbered, so it's not conducive to widespread trapping.
Have biologists recommended wolf control in that area?
Mr. Chairman, the Board of Game authorized a wolf control program there in 1996. That's why we had done all the estimates and the censuses on the wolves, to get information for the Board of Game. What we do is we present the information to the board and tell them, and you know, they have population goals, harvest goals, and tell them that, you know, you're not going to be able to reach those goals with the predation rate, and then it's up to the board whether they authorize wolf control program or not, and they did. They reauthorized that program for another five-year period in January of this year, about a month ago.
And there are no plans currently with the department to carry out any wolf control in that area?
Right now, Mr. Chairman, there are discussions going on within the department about the potential of taking action this year with the remainder of the winter. It's getting towards the period where we're running out of, you probably can't do it past about the 30th of March or so because of, you need good snow conditions. And I'm not sure that no decision has been made whether we will do anything this year and it is, or next year.
Sure. And would that be shooting wolves?
Mr. Chairman, if we're going to do a wolf control effort, it would need to be shooting wolves out of airplanes or helicopters.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you, Mr. Reagan.
Senator Taylor and then Senator Lincoln. prior to 94, what numbers did you have? We've heard about 96. The board had already voted in 96 to do something, and then you went out to study it. What did you have prior to 94?
In 90, we don't have any... We have no moose censuses done by then. We have trend counts in different areas, and we do calf-cow surveys. And starting in about, we started watched the population start to decline in that country in about, I think it was 88, and started by a series of bad winters, which oftentimes starts these declines, gives the wolves a real advantage, and it's continued to decline until today. Our biologists that have worked and have tried to model the population to predict what might happen, and we're probably already close to the low equilibrium, what we call a low equilibrium for the predator prey, that will probably drop down to around 1,200 moose, around 50 wolves, and they'll just stay there for a very long time. And at that population level and at that moose number of wolves, there will be we'll only be able to harvest 40 to 50 moose out of that population each year.
Is there, well, the decline started in 88, and I believe Senator Kelly asked you what actions you had taken since 96, and you said none. Can you tell me what actions were taken to reduce the predator population in that area between 1988 and 1996 when Senator Kelly's question was asked?
Mr. Chairman, the department didn't take any control actions. We went into the area and taught trapping clinics at two of the villages trying to encourage local trapping, but there was no department control efforts.
You have actually done some control efforts on wolf populations in other areas of the state, though, since 96, haven't you?
Since 96, the area that we have where we are trying to do a wolf control effort is in the 40-mile caribou area.
And in fact, you went out and you tranquilized a bunch of those wolves and moved them down to the Kenai, where no one had ever asked you to bring them a wolf, but you took wolves down there and gave them to the people of Kenai, didn't you?
Mr. Chairman, the program was for sterilization of the alpha male and female in, I think, a total now of 15 packs, and then we moved the subdominant wolves. We moved them to several different locations. The first year, we moved them. Some of them went to the Kenai. I don't know the exact number. What we did is, one of the things that we did was not move any wolves into an area where a local advisory committee did not, where we went and explained the program and asked them if they were, it was okay with them. They may not be in most areas, that's who we asked, because it was the only group that we had to discuss it with.
How many wolves do you think you moved out of or sterilized in the 40 mile?
I think we've moved about 80 wolves now.
80 wolves, okay. And how many do you think you sterilized?
I believe 30, 15 packs. Might be 32 because I believe a couple moved in.
Okay, so we're looking there at 112 wolves have either been moved or sterilized out of the 40 mile.
Well, Mr. Chairman, the point there is we're trying to stop the reproduction of wolves, and we did 5 packs a year, and we've been able, and the theory is it was an experiment that was based on work that had been done in the Yukon Territory very successfully, and the theory is that if you could reduce the wolves to only 2 per pack rather than 10 or 12 or even more, you're going to significantly lower the predation rate. And the theory was if you kept the male, alpha male and female there, they would hold the pack territories and not reproduce. And in fact, that's happened in, I think, 14 out of the 15 packs. The caribou population has increased from about 22,000 when we started to just over 40,000.
Well, I appreciate the department's efforts there, But actually, the department's efforts were preceded by 2 years of individual efforts where people contributed their own money in that area to go in and reduce that population, and they reduced it by an even greater number than what you've done in actual contact with wolves. But I appreciate the fact that seeing that their efforts were succeeding and that that herd was starting to come back, that you did go in there and actually do some work. I guess my question is, and I don't want to get off the point, from my concerns about the McGrath area, is I have a hard time understanding why the department focused on the 40 mile and took 112 wolves basically out of that and reduced its reproducing capacity. Why in the world would you do that when the department knew from 1988 on you had a crashing population of moose in the McGrath area? Why weren't you out there sterilizing moose in McGrath and talking about alphas and betas and reducing wolves in the McGrath area and taking some of those wolves out instead of allowing them to decimate that population? I don't understand why you're doing one thing in the 40 mile and doing absolutely nothing in McGrath.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Taylor, the 40 mile program was conducted following an intensive 2-year effort with local people, advisory committees from both the United States and Canada, or from Alaska and Canada, native groups, different sportsmen's organizations, and some environmental groups, and they put, these 18 members of this group put together a plan, and their plan, or their recommendation to us, was to try this sterilization program rather than a lethal killing program, a lethal wolf control program. The reason was both they and us were looking for ways of reducing or managing the predation rate and reducing the predation rate in areas that weren't so controversial that they kept getting stopped by the public. And I think that we've succeeded there, that we've had very little controversy about this except from the most extreme animal rights groups. It seems to be working well, and I give full credit to the trappers that started in there before we did, because they did a lot of good. But the area, we put our effort on the 15 packs that were right in, focused on the area right where the caribou calve. That kind of a program can only work in very few places. It would not work at all in the McGrath area, because if we're talking about moose instead of caribou, the reason it can work in the 40-mile area is they all calve in a concentrated area, and you only have to deal with about 15 wolf packs. And it just wouldn't work in the McGrath area. And so we didn't try, and there probably, I don't know if there's another place in Alaska right now where we have any kind of a problem where a sterilization program might work, because you have to have the right set of conditions. In the McGrath area, we didn't take any action, I guess because we didn't know what kind of action to take without going out and actually shooting wolves out of airplanes or out of helicopters. Most of the time in these areas, and what's gone on in Alaska in the last several years, is several of the tools that we use as wildlife managers and the Board of Game used to regulate wolf numbers to keep them in balance with their prey have been taken away. We used to have, many years ago, aerial shooting. That's been stopped, I think, since 1971. It was done by permit up till then. Then the practice of land and shoot became common. Some people got very good at it. And in many locations in Alaska, that was used, and it kept the wolf populations in balance with their prey. That technique, or that tool, was removed by ballot initiative in 1997, 96. So at this time, we don't have an effective tool to regulate wolf populations in most of Alaska, especially where the terrain and the vegetation are not conducive to trapping. Parts of the North Slope where there's wide open areas, parts of Unit 13, you can do a good job with trapping. Other places, you just can't, because you don't have access to put out enough trap lines.
Thank you much. I'd like some other witnesses to have a chance to testify. I'm sorry I took a little long.
Senator Lincoln?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman, and I'll try and be real brief because I'd like to hear from those folks that came down to testify as well. And I do hope that, Wayne, you will stay here through the testimony, that in case we have other questions after everyone has an opportunity to testify. But I just want to hear from the department, and I'm sorry that the commissioner was unable to attend the meeting, but would you consider the situation in McGrath for the ratio of wolf to moose to be an unhealthy situation?
Yes, I would.
I then would like to hear what the department is doing to address that now. I heard you say that, you know, March 30th deadline, and I get real nervous about that to do something this year and even into next year. And so realizing that, what is the department going to do or have something underway now?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Lincoln, when I said it was unhealthy, it's an unhealthy situation as far as us being able to achieve the goals that we have for the moose population in that area and for us to harvest, for the local people to harvest the number of moose they need. But over most of interior Alaska, historically, we've had low levels of moose with periodic eruptions. This low-level equilibrium is probably, it's hard to say it's unhealthy because it's probably a natural way that, you know, over centuries or many, many centuries, it's gone that way. What we've become accustomed to is since miners came into the country, we've regulated and controlled the wolf populations, and it was very effectively done through poisoning, aerial shooting in the 50s and early 60s at statehood. We stopped poisoning. Aerial wolf control continued through 71. Actually, I think some permits were issued up to 73. And we're still, in many parts of Alaska, we're still being able to have high moose populations because of those efforts, primarily on bears, because when they put poisons out for wolves, they also kept the bear populations at very low levels, and bears take a long, long time to recover from low levels. So we're at a point now where people are still accustomed to high populations. We don't have the tools to regulate the wolves anymore, and so we're coming back into what, for many people that have become accustomed and dependent on moose, can no longer get them. So what we need is a tool or a technique that's acceptable to the public to help us regulate the wolf population. And as you well know how controversial it is to shoot them out of airplanes, the department has been successful a few times in doing wolf control. Far more times we've been unsuccessful than we've been successful, because probably in over three-fourths of our efforts, we get stopped before we can finish the job by public, either court action or by public resistance to the program. So I guess I'm open to suggestions of how to do this in a manner that's acceptable to the public. We don't have to have public support, but we have to have broad enough acceptance of the public that they don't stop us. And I'm not sure that the department shooting them out of helicopters is the long-term solution.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I will ask the question, but I won't ask for an answer because I know that there are others out here who want to testify, and I don't want to cut them off. But I would like later, if we have time, to bring you back, because I want to know what the department is thinking then of what that tool should be and what we as legislators should and can do to help you to achieve that. Surely you all must have been given this some thought and not just saying, well, you know, the general public, and is that the general public in the rest of the United States, or is that the general public in Anchorage and Fairbanks, or is that the general public in McGrath? And with that, I'll let you think about those questions.
Let's try and go to the people that came for the teleconference. I would note the presence of Representative Jewell and Representative Ogun. But if we can, let's go ahead with the people that came from out of town. We have, by teleconference, Mike Flegel, who is the chief of the McGrath Tribal Council. Mike, are you on?
Yes, sir, I'm on.
Would you go ahead and give us your testimony?
Yes, Senator Helfert, thank you for this opportunity, and members of the Joint Senate and House Resources Committee hearing. I'd like to take just a brief opportunity. I know you got a lot of people lined up to testify, and a lot of what I've said, what I've got to say, you folks have heard before, so I'll be fairly brief, and then maybe the more efficient way would be to answer questions that you might have. First of all, I think that it's pretty clear that we have a situation out here that begs for some type of program to help alleviate it, and we're not sure how we're going to do that as a local population. I think that we're exhausting all of our efforts in trying to work the government system that is put in place for us to use. We've petitioned the Board of Game twice as a council and through TCC the last time, but for relief, the Board of Game has reviewed all of the biological information and have found in favor and has passed programs that have been administratively not carried out. It's been referred to as an administrative veto. It's not necessarily a veto, but whatever it's called, the administration has decided not to carry out our programs. And I'd like to clarify for the record, too, I am speaking on behalf of the McGrath Village Council. I do serve on the Board of Game, and I don't want my testimony to reflect the board's position. I may be referring to knowledge that I have that is public from the board, but I in no way am intending to speak as a member of the board or speaking on behalf of the board, so just to make that clear. I think that the main hang-up on getting the program implemented has been the governor and his three criteria, which have come out of the National Academy of Sciences report that he had done to study wolf and bear predation and efforts, control efforts in the past. And those three criteria are sound science, cost effectiveness, and broad-based public support. And I think that we have done our part as far as trying to meet those objectives in trying to put this plan forward. I think that realistically, the Board of Game has tried to meet those objectives as best as they could. I was not able to participate in the deliberation or voting on this second time that this issue came before the board because I was the one that submitted it on behalf of the council, but I was present and watched and testified on behalf of it. And so the three criteria, I think that the biology is clear. We've even got the Department of Fish and Game, Wayne Regland just stated the support from the department that we do have a situation that is unhealthy, I guess was the word that was used, and we do know, and the department has showed us through their modeling that by reducing wolf numbers, we will see a reverse of the decline and then a start increase in the moose population. And so I think that the biology is clear. We have prime riparian habitat, and it is not a limiting factor in the moose population, as some are claiming. This habitat can easily carry at least one moose per square mile, and in similar habitat around the state, the current population density levels are up to 2 to 3 moose per square mile in similar habitat. The last estimate is down about a quarter of a moose per square mile, and we know that is way low, far too low than what our habitat can carry. The biology is clear. Okay, number two, cost effectiveness. I think that if you look at it as a, if it were a state administered plan, it would be very expensive to do. I mean, you'd have to hire aircraft, you'd have to hire shooters, whatever it took, or if it was a ground-based program, as last was done up in Unit 20, you know, the government, the state would have to pay for the trapper's time and effort out there. I think that what the council has proposed and the Board of Game passed in this reauthorization of this plan is, which incidentally is the result of SB 74, which you all passed into law last year, that gave some of the tools back to the department that Wayne was just speaking about. Some of the tools have been given back to the department to use, and that is the issuance of permits to private citizens for shooting from the air or land and shoot. And I think that is your number one most efficient method of controlling the wolf population, is to turn it over to the public and regulate it as an agency instead of having the agency doing it. I think that by doing so, you would remove yourself from a lot of the publicity, the negative publicity that is given any of these programs that have been done by the department in the past. You're far less likely to have a television camera out there with you when you're doing this, and I think that it would be done at very little cost to the state. The broad-based public support is the hardest one to define. I think that we've shown that we have as broad a base public support as we can possibly generate. We've got the Alaska Outdoor Council signed on with us, the Alaska Professional Hunters Association. We've got the tribal councils from several interior villages and some Bristol Bay folks and Arctic Fold folks, and pretty broad-based, in my opinion. In fact, I think that we've seen that overall that people in Alaska, when polled, do support some form of predator control where the game stock is in danger. And in fact, after the board passed the reauthorized the McGrath plan, Channel 2 News did a online survey, which, to everyone's surprise, was found to be in favor, in support of reducing predation by predator control. I think that the hang-up here is, though, I think that when the governor and his people are talking about broad-based public support, I think that they mean unanimous public support, and I just don't think they're going to get that. I don't think you're going to get the Alaska Wildlife Alliance or Dr. Gordon Haber or some of these other extreme left groups signing on to this program, no matter what you do. And I think that we have to get past trying to appease a very small segment of the population for the good of the whole. I think that we have what we need to continue. Now, I applaud the legislature's attempt to help us with this issue, and I just appeal to you guys now. We're at a point now to where we feel that drastic measures need to be taken, and we're not getting it done through the existing channels. We have, like I said, raised this issue before the governor in 96, held a public meeting in McGrath with the governor, and there was indication that we were on the right path then. And, of course, now 3.5 years later, and we're not any closer. And so we started working some different avenues, and it's got some people upset, and some people are threatened by what we're doing. But we're getting desperate out here, and I don't mind saying that. And I know that there's going to be opposition to what we do, but we've got to move on. Our council has authorized with the other local councils in the area, McGrath, Tukotna, Nikolai, and Tulida, have all joined forces and have instituted a wolf harvest incentive program to just try to encourage the legal harvest of an available surplus of a resource for two reasons. One is to harvest, the other one is to reduce the of predation. But I don't know that that will be the answer either. Any type of encouragement to increase the harvest without using airplanes, I think, is going to be pretty hard to have here. So I don't know what else to say other than that we need these programs, otherwise we wouldn't be petitioning the Board of Game for it. I think the Board is strongly behind it. I think that the Department of Fish and Game in the rank and file is strongly behind it. I think that you'll find that the buck stops at the commissioner, the chief of staff, and the governor's office. And I think that that's been the problem. And I'm just wondering what, with our checks and balances in our government system, I believe in that checks and balance system, but not when it holds up sound science and what is definitely what's good for the country. I think that something needs to be addressed here, and I'm not sure what the solution is. I guess with that, I'll close with that and maybe answer questions if you have questions.
Okay, questions? Representative Kapsner.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Good afternoon, Mike Slegel. This is Mary Kapsner. I was wondering if you could talk about some people have criticized us saying, well, we have very high hunter success rates. Can you talk about what happens if we don't have high hunter success rates and what our alternative food sources might be?
Thank you, Mary. That's a good question. I know that people are going to use those data that the Fish and Game Department has, and they do show the success rates in the past years around the grass to be up around 50%, which is considered in the hunting world to be fairly good. But I'd like to address that here. We have a lot of restrictions on who can hunt here. We're not open to non-residents. We have controlled use areas, not surrounding, but just upriver from us, so aircraft hunters aren't able to come in here. So it's pretty much a local hunted area. And when, as you know, you're from downriver, you know when a local person, when a person that lives off the resource goes out to hunt for the resource. He's not out hunting for the good time or for the sport. He's out hunting to get his animal. And around here, what we have found is people are still going out there and are getting their moose when possible. It is, as the numbers might suggest, 50%. I would think that those numbers are not quite adequate. I think that people are reporting their kill but not reporting when they don't kill, which, you know, probably just throwing the card away. But anyway, people are working harder, going a lot farther to harvest their moose, and we're seeing the harvest is down. I think the last reported data that we have was for 1998, and it was down to about 26 moose, I think. I have that data here somewhere. I just don't have it right handy. But I don't know if I can be any more specific, Mary.
Mr. Chairman, Mike, what are some of our alternative food sources?
Well, okay, that's another good point here in the McGrath area. I know that it's been stated by the well-known independent biologist in the state that caribou are a regular newcomer into the area here, and that's not true. Caribou, as Wayne suggested earlier, has only been here two times in the last recent history, two times out of the last 4 years, and that's not regular in my mind, and there's no telling whether they'll be back or not, so we don't have caribou as a regular resident species. The only other alternate game species around here would be fish, which, of course, we're up on the upper Kuskokwim, and people do eat the fish. It isn't as good as what we'd get, you know, down in the Bethel area or the Cripple Creek area or whatnot. There isn't really all that much option here for as far as wild game. Moose is the primary source of wild meat.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And I'd like to note for the record that although it didn't get much press, the Kuskokwim had another fish disaster this year. It was the third consecutive and the fourth in 7 years and the worst ever. So, and especially upriver, the catch per unit effort or the catch for effort was very, very low, and people were spending a lot more money on gasoline and just time trying to catch what little fish were available.
Poor advertising.
If I might jump back in there, I agree with Mary. people are doing the same thing here. They're spending a lot more money on gas and traveling hundreds of miles, and they're out there hunting the entire month of the season. It isn't just a game, you know. It isn't just go out and pitch our tent and have a good time. We're out there looking for meat. Now, if you look at those success rates, the numbers, I've got the data before me now, and it, let's say from 1994 to 97, we're averaging about 45 to 50 moose harvested. 98, the reported harvest was 26, it's about half. And 99, I think, is going to show another drop. So very, very low hunter numbers and very low moose harvest numbers overall, even though the success rate might look good.
Senator Kelly?
Well, Mike, this is Pete Kelly. When we were in McGrath a few weeks ago, you had said that it would take about 10 years to bring this population back. What was the source of that data?
Thank you, Senator Kelly. That is a projection by the department. The department gave a review at the Board of Game meeting in January in Anchorage when they addressed our petition. And as I stated, I was present there, so I got to see the data. And they feel that it would take 10 years, according to their computer models, to bring the population, first of all, to halt the decline and then to bring the population back up. It would take a long-term effort.
And that was that to the 4,000 number that Mr. Reglin had spoken of, or was that to a number somewhat lower than that?
That was to a number somewhat lower than that. There were different models presented, and one model was with just doing wolf reduction period of 10 years with no weather considerations, and that showed a fairly good increase in the moose. The other one showed, you know, factored in weather variables, and that showed a little less of a increase in the population. Another model looked at maybe perhaps different factors, and I don't remember, I don't have those models right here before me, but there were different model scenarios given, and I think the best one that they had showed the moose population after 10 years increasing to around 3,000.
So we don't even get it back up to historical levels after 10 years?
No, and I think that 4,000 is just a ballpark figure. I think that we've got some good estimate data from lifetime residents here and past biologists that concur with the resident expert or, you know, estimate that the actual levels were up more like probably 6,000 at the high.
Thank you, Mike.
Senator Taylor?
Yeah, briefly, Mike, thank you so much for your testimony and your hard work on this issue. I really appreciate it. I have long advocated that we go to regional boards and allow local people to make decisions as opposed to having a statewide board. In light of that, do you really believe, Mike, that a regional board made up of people in that area would have waited 12 years before they started talking about doing anything about wolf control?
Well, no. Senator Taylor, thanks for the question. I don't know really how to answer that, but I think you're right that if it were given to, if the authority were given to local people, that action or noise might have been made sooner. I think in defense of the board that we have now, when the issue was raised to the board by local people, they did act on behalf of it. I don't think that they were necessarily looking for these problem areas and trying to head them off, which may be a fault of having a statewide board. But no, I really can't fault the board on this. The board has been behind the program as long as I know.
Thank you much.
Thank you. If there's no further questions, let's go to Greg. Sure. Go ahead.
Mike, this is Reggie Jewell. A lot of the discussion has been centered around wolf. My question, how is your bear population out there, and are they a contributing factor to the problem?
Thank you, Representative Jewell. And, yeah, it, you know, again, just living here, I can't attest to the fact that there's as many bears here as the department thinks there are. We do see black bears around, and we do know that they eat moose calves. In fact, my brother-in-law himself was driving out the road to my house one summer a couple of years ago, and then got in between a black bear that was trying to kill a calf right on the road. So we know it happens. The department estimates that approximately 55% of the calf mortality in this area is, and I think that number is correct. I don't have the number right before me, but I think I remember that number, that is attributable to black bears. And they base the black bear population out here around this area based on work that they did in the lower Keokuk and the Nuwitman drainage, and have used those same density estimates and calculated it to McGrath. I don't agree. I don't think that there's that many bear. However, even if there were as many black bear in the region as they think there are, they have factored that factor into the model, and they have shown that even with that level of black bear predation, that reducing the wolf numbers will affect the turnaround of the moose decline.
Oh, Mike, you kept referring to black bears there. What's the population of brown or grizzly in the area?
Brown bears are few and far between in the unit. And the Board of Game, because it was an intensive management unit, a few years back lifted the restrictions on the 1-for-4 and the tag fee. So now a resident hunter can kill a bear a year here and not have to buy a tag. And it caused the brown bear harvest to jump all the way from an average of 2 bears to 4 bears. I mean, you know, 100% increase. But very few grizzlies harvested out here just because there are very few. 19D East is generally lowland riparian forested timber country, and you know we all know that the grizzlies prefer the open ground up in the hills. So we just don't have that many grizzlies around.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thanks, Mike.
Thanks, Mike. Then we'll go to Greg Rozitska.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, my name is Greg Rozitska, and I serve as the vice chair of the State Board of Game. I think both Wayne and Mike have done a very good job already setting out pretty much the scenario as far as the numbers and the situation go for the McGrath area. And one of the things that the board is really wrestling with, we certainly have the criteria as far as the biology being there and an effective program, a cost-effective program can be done. And we run into the problem of this nebulous broad-based public support or acceptance or whatever it may be. And as we all know or would expect in any kind of a volatile issue such as this, you're going to have 10 or 15% of the people on each end of the spectrum that are going to make their decision based on emotion rather than intellect. But we've really been trying to come up with some kind of a criteria or how to address that criteria in some realistic fashion. And, of course, the only thing you can really do is try to make some kind of an intensive education effort. And I'd like to read to you right now a position paper which the board has come up with to try to get out to the middle, you know, 70 to 80% of the, not necessarily apathetic public, but uneducated public, of how we feel a wolf control situation is within the state. There's a central question underlying the wolf control debate is whether it is best to actively manage an ecosystem containing wolves. A good case can be made that in places where we harvest moose and caribou for human use, leaving predators out of the management equation may not be desirable for people, for the predators, or for the ecosystem at large. A common perception about wolves is that because they have fared so badly worldwide, they must be near extinction in interior Alaska as well, and that any intentional mortality by people will push them over the brink. Actually, the opposite is true. Given the large areas of ideal habitat, along with wolf mobility and fecundity, it has proved difficult to reduce wolf numbers for any length of time. The normal state of affairs in interior Alaska is a low density of large mammals with occasional eruptions to higher numbers. And here is the essence of how predator-prey dynamics appear to work, using moose and wolves as the best understood example. Occasionally, conditions are favorable, and moose increase until they reach a habitat limit and begin to run out of food, or bad winters place them under stress. In either case, they become more available to wolves. In response, the wolf population increases and creates an imbalance between the predators and their prey. Once moose numbers are driven down, wolves then decline through starvation and social strife, such as cannibalism. Under extreme, but not particularly unusual circumstances, very low densities of predators and prey can be reached and persist for decades, as corroborated by the National Academy of Sciences report to Governor Knowles on predator management. And this is the current situation that we now have in 19D East. When that happens, the basal metabolism of the ecosystem shifts into a low gear. It is a time of privation for scavengers, predators, and people. Such a landscape is not only short of meat, it is short of viewing opportunities and other key components of wilderness. As an Athabaskan elder from the Yukon testified to us, since when the moose and caribou are gone, the country dies. It is a biologically defensible to manage for minimizing the depth and duration of extreme population lows. When habitat is not the primary limiting factor, and predation almost certainly is. Typically, predation has three components, people, bears, and wolves. It is standard State Board of Game policy to reduce human harvest when a prey population is declining, but total cessation of hunting by itself is almost never enough to arrest the decline. Substantially reducing brown bear populations is not desirable due to their low reproductive potential and the problems with estimating their numbers accurately. Ecosystem modeling and reproductive biology show that it is most effective and safest to manipulate wolf numbers because of their resilience. Wolves will come back quickly, even if over-harvested. Bears won't. Once a low predator-prey equilibrium has been reached, wolf control is likely to succeed only if wolf populations can be greatly reduced for periods of up to a decade. Responding proactively to a predicted major decline minimizes the necessary length of the reduction period, which would be the current situation we now have in GMU 13. Weather and other ecosystem factors can confound predictions in random ways, and in short, outcomes can never be predicted precisely. The long-term prognosis for Alaskan wolves depends on our public policy towards habitat. So long as habitat is defined for all practical purposes as that land that we haven't gotten around to developing yet, wolves and all wildlife will decline. But in places where large areas of ecologically intact country remain, wolf control, done with careful consideration and attention to science, can result in a more abundant life for moose, wolves, and people. And that is the board's position that was just recently developed to speak to wolf control in the state.
Senator Taylor. I appreciate that statement very much, and your being here. Have you received any assurances from the department that they will carry out the policy that the board has established?
The department, as Wayne mentioned earlier, has a great concern about the durability of any program that goes into place. And that is their primary goal and concern right at this time.
I guess the department, I don't know how often you get a chance to talk with them, but I assume you work as a board fairly closely with the department's biologists. Do they not consider it yet a decision or an action on their part to have done nothing? I mean, that's as much of a decision as doing something. I mean, to sit back since 1988 knowing they had a continued decline and not do a thing, that is an action. In fact, in the law, if you do an action and it's kind of negative or mean, you call it malfeasance. But if you sit idly by and watch something go on that shouldn't occur, that's called misfeasance. And it would seem to me that there is an action that has taken place for the last 12 years and definitely for the last six, and that's to do nothing. To study it, look at it, hold meetings on it, and then wring our hands about public, broad-based public support.
I wouldn't say that's really a fair statement that they let it slide for 12 years, no. When the initial plan was put into effect, that the board did find it for an emergency in 95, and the subsequent board in 96 looked at the issue again and in fact moved the effective date forward come that following winter, was when the ballot initiative went into effect, and they were preempted from acting over the next couple of years. And of course, the governor also, in fairness to him as well, he inherited the problem in 92, I think, when Governor Hickel backed down to the boycott threats and so forth. And I feel at that time, if that faction would have been stood up to and say, sorry, if you're going to come to Alaska, that's just something that we do here. We do hunt and kill animals for food. Certainly it would have had a great economic impact, or who's to say how great, I don't know, but for a season or two. But I think it would have blown over at that point in time. But anyway, back to where we are now. We essentially have, that tool has just become available again here during this last year. Any effective tool as far as aerial hunting goes.
But again, do you have any assurances from them that they are going to do anything in the next 2 years, this year or next year?
We are sure that they're doing everything they can to try to do it, yes.
Thank you.
Senator Lincoln.
One quick question. Do you see any other effective method of controlling the wolf predator problem that exists right now in the McGrath area other than aerial?
Not initially, no, given the nature of the countryside. There's been some suggestions, you know, in the past, this old fellow from the Yukon that testified to us that I quoted within this position paper, mentioned denning as a traditional practice that was done in the past. That may be an option to look at, but as far as knocking the numbers down right at that point, and it doesn't get to when the moose are at their most vulnerable as well, which is during the winter.
Do you mind us getting a copy of that testimony?
No,
because I thought it was really excellent.
Reggie, did you get your?
Go ahead. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. You mentioned something about the department's ability to initiate something because of a questionable durability to continue that, I think something along those lines.
Mm-hmm.
Are you equating that to dollar resources of initiating something and then being able to continue that for the 10-year period length of time or over time? Is that what I'm...
No, not at all. You're speaking to the monetary factors?
Right. I'm just wondering if they're feeling like, or you're saying that if they were to start something, whether or not they'd have the resources to continue.
No, that wasn't what I meant to say at all. I was reflecting, Mr. Redmond stated it to you as well earlier, in that there's, I believe it's been since the early 70s that any kind of a lethal wolf control program has been allowed to go forward because of public interference through lawsuits or economic boycott threats and things of that nature, that they've never been allowed to be carried through. And that was one of the major criticisms as well that was in the National Academy of Sciences report. It's if you're going to carry out a program, you ought to do everything you can to make sure that it does go to fruition so you have measurable effects.
Thank you. Representative Ogun.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. We have a long list of people, and we're asking so many questions. I don't want to miss anybody.
Be very brief. Wouldn't land and shoot help? I mean, you said there was a discussion about only aerial might help the area, but land and shoot, be able to fly the same day, land and shoot. That's not aerial wolf hunting, although it was the environmental or the animal rights groups led the public to believe that's what they were voting on. That would be pretty effective in that area, wouldn't it?
Yeah, I guess I look at it as being an all-inclusive statement. Aerial hunting is using an airplane to go hunting.
Right. But I think we need to be careful how we say that, because the public perception is that aerial hunting means you're flying around from airplanes, shooting wolves from airplanes. And I'm a pilot myself, and I know that landing an airplane in the winter anywhere, even on a runway, is a little tricky because of the light and everything else. And you go out and land an airplane on skis with no improvements. And I mean, in the light levels, I mean, it's not, I mean, I think it's almost fair pretty fair chase because a lot of pilots that get buggered up doing it and a lot of planes. I mean, it's not a not an easy proposition.
As I understand it, that was effective at after the intensive efforts that were that had taken place, that was an effective means as well, at least to keep populations in check, the wolf populations in check, and maintain some of the high levels of ungulates that we have in various areas of the state.
Let's go on to the next witness. Oh,
before he leaves,
Mary Kastner, go ahead.
Thank you, Greg. Mike mentioned the wolf harvest incentive program that they instituted in McGrath. If that's legal, what would prohibit the Board of Game from implementing that on a statewide level?
The subject has never come up. I wouldn't know. I wouldn't know what legal ramifications are in there or not. All incentive programs that are put in place have been done through private organizations, contributions of individuals. Whether I really don't know if it's a possibility under existing law. It would be equated to essentially reinstating bounties. Putting it under
would take a law and an appropriation.
I have no idea. I can't answer that.
Thank you.
Okay, let's go to Donnie Flegel.
Can we get Greg's testimony?
Greg, did you have your testimony written?
Yeah, the thing you read to us.
We'll get that copy.
I'd like to thank you for the opportunity to be here and thank you for taking valuable time out of your schedule. Representative Hudson, I stopped at your office to tell you that Don Harris's kids send by to say hello and you've been busy, but just hello and goodbye.
He was my old boss, good boss.
Yeah, I represent the Rural CAP. I am the new board chairman and I'm here to speak on behalf of Rural CAP and behalf of my community of McGrath. In Village, Alaska, where heavy dependence on renewable resources exists, there is a recognition of strong linkages between subsistence needs not being met and predation. When the Tribal Council of McGrath hosted the statewide rural summit on intensive active management, otherwise known as the Wolf Summit, February 1st and 2nd, the issue resonated within Village, Alaska with 160 representatives from South Central, Yukon, Kuskokwim Delta, the Interior, the Northwest, and Bristol Bay. Rural CAP participated in this village effort by providing staff support and resources. This summit was held in a village where the issues are occurring. The goal of this meeting was to bring rural Alaskans together in rural Alaska to discuss and arrive at strategies and remedies to use in addressing the declining moose and caribou populations and its primary predator, the wolf, that threatens our villagers' ability to eat our traditional annual meat. A wolf is a year-round hunter. A bear is a part-time hunter. We chose to address the year-round hunter at this rural summit. At this meeting, we shared information about wildlife populations, research regulations were exchanged. Public testimony was taken from village people about the impacts of wildlife management on our way of life. And work sessions were used to arrive at solutions that were practical and attainable to all involved. Some of the questions we addressed were, how can village people deal with our moose and our caribou herds, which once thrived, now on the decline in many areas? What happens after Tier 2 and subsistence when there are no caribou or moose left to bring us through our long winters? How then can we show our children how to appreciate wildlife in its natural habitat? How will we be able to teach our children how to subsist off the land and be grateful for all it gives us? In the end, the participants approved a strategy and plan of action on 6 different levels: legislative, litigation, Board of Game, public support, tribal strategies, and local design. I am pleased to report that individuals in each of these working groups took the developed and written report and have begun in their own respective fields to see these suggestions become reality. McGrath is unique. It's located in Game Management Unit 19D East, where the only wolf predation control program passed by the State Board of Game is in effect under 5AAC.92.125, parentheses around 1, and has been there since 1995, and yet uniquely, no intensive active management has yet to occur, despite the area having followed due process allowing sound science to be used, strict criteria for a biological emergency to be met twice, and having gone out to public review. The Upper Kuskokwim people have exhausted due process and find that the buck stops with the governor and the commissioner of fish and game, who have refused to date to implement a lethal wolf control program to protect a moose herd soon to be on the verge of extinction. When predator-prey ratios reach such an imbalance as to threaten one species, concerns become fears. Many people in rural Alaska can tell you what it's like to go through a winter without a moose or caribou, and how it felt to hunt and hunt and hunt and still return home without the traditional food needed for the winter months. Many can also tell you without a degree in biology what sign they saw on the sandbars and what is happening in their environment. Many can go back years and give a year-by-year account. We know in Game Management Unit 19D East that the governor has consistently blocked any effort that will effectively manage wolf predation on moose in rural Alaska. Let it be said that we have coexisted with nature for thousands of years, and we celebrate our way of life and rich heritage that has been passed down from generation to generation by teaching our children time-tested ways to live off the country in our land. We rejoice in seeing wildlife in its natural habitat, and what we harvest we use in countless ways. We believe that managing ecosystems that contain wolves, which are in abundance in Alaska, is necessary for all of the animals and for all of the people. Some areas are on the verge of an ecological disaster, and my area is the first one out. Moose and caribou headed for crashes or near extinction only spell doom for the wolves that will then starve after wiping out the beaver. Managing wolves is not eliminating wolves, nor does anyone want to see all the wolves gone. On the contrary, we wish to see both big game and other species thrive in an environment which is not the case in many areas of Village Alaska. While our moose and caribou herds are continuing to decline at alarming rates, wolf packs are growing in number, size, and daring. Mothers are seeing wolves in their yards and are alarmed for the safety of their children who walk back and forth to school and play outdoors. Wolf tracks on the edge of villages or within villages is commonplace now. Moose reproduction rates are much lower than wolves. Village Alaskans know that, and so do scientists. Aggressive wolf control will not threaten their survival. There is no question that the vast majority of villagers want active reduction of wolf numbers by the state, and it would cost the state nothing to allow locals to shoot wolves using aircraft. There would be much to gain by all of us if the governor would support a healthy subsistence resource and support the Alaska Department of Fish and Game biologists. It appears to us that his devotion to those who would brook no killing of wolves, despite the fact that in some areas wolves have now started to eat themselves. If the wolves are not short on prey, why are they turning to cannibalism? What is crueler? We are not ashamed of being hunters, fishers, subsisters, trappers, and gatherers, nor are we ashamed of being wildlife managers or knowing our country. Sometimes it is wise to correct the imbalances for all living things. We seem to be caught in a dialogue, a political dialogue of wanting to eat and wanting to feed our families versus killing wolves. In concluding today, I want to bring Niall Caesar, the BIA Regional Director's words, to mind. In a letter written to the governor, Niall Caesar states, "Certainly, you must agree that subsistence food is more important than the retention of moose populations merely to feed roving wolf packs. When we care more about animals than about our human residents, we indeed fail to serve the people we are appointed to protect and represent. And I bring to you a growing economic and subsistence disaster that we're experiencing in Western Alaska. Thank you. Thank you.
Questions by members of the committee? Senator Taylor?
Tony, that was a great statement, by the way. Thank you for the meeting you put on and work you put on out there. I only had one question. Do you believe that, quote, broad-based public support is an appropriate criteria upon which to base decisions about wildlife management?
I think I would have to go back to Senator Lincoln's comments about what is broad-based public support. Is it the local support in Unit 19D East? Is it Anchorage? Is it Fairbanks? Is it below Juneau? Just exactly where it is. We can't find it in Alaska statute anyway, so we're having a real difficult time. I will tell you that AFN passed a resolution in support of this wolf control program. The Alaska Intertribal Council supports it. Village Alaska supports this. Rural Cap supports this. Of course, BIA supports this, and our respective senator and representative from our district does also. So we're struggling with that, defining that. We don't know what it means.
Like you, I don't believe it has any basis in wildlife management. The decision about whether to manage or save a herd should be based solely upon biological evidence and the most expeditious way to handle it and to sustain it. And I don't believe that it is an appropriate criteria, and I think we need to remove it because it can't be objectively defined, as you've said. I can tell you this and assure you this. District A supports your efforts also.
Thank you, Senator Taylor.
Representative Ogden.
I'd like to quickly echo myself or associate myself with the senator that I know I certainly support your efforts and thought your testimony was very eloquent.
Thank you, Representative Ogden. Thank you.
Representative Morgan.
Thank you. You heard the population dropped in 1996 from went down to 12 to 1,400. Do you know how many one wolf, how many moose does it consume in a year?
Number one, we've been told, Representative Morgan, by the Department of Fish and Game that a good rule of thumb is 12 moose per one wolf. And if you take your numbers of 55, because you're stating that in 1997 when those estimates were taken that those wolves have not reproduced, they have just stayed at 56, 55.
So
we would have 660 moose eaten out of your 12 to 1,400 number, and we do dispute that 12 to 1,400 number also. If I may continue?
Yes, please.
I took an airplane trip downriver to Stony River, about 125 miles from McGrath, the other day, and Lucky Egress, a local pilot, and I flew all the way back, and we counted moose. Our moose are out on the rivers. They're out on the sandbars. They're out eating the willows this time of year. We know it. And we only counted 200. So we have reason to believe that the moose estimated numbers are too high, and certainly ample enough visual evidence that the wolf numbers are estimated at too low of a rate.
Right. Can you continue? So that at 12 moose, a year one wolf. Without the bear predation or natural causes, the five villages in the upper country in the very near future are not going to have no moose.
Less than 2 years.
In 2 years. Thank you.
Donnie, just a question, and I've heard the answer from you, but I think it's illustrative of why people worry in villages. You might just give us a rundown on your two dogs from recent times.
On November 24th, my husband Mike and I traveled into Anchorage to meet our two sons, Einar and Frank, who met us there from Mount Edgecombe. The reason that we chose not to have them come home is because it would have been they would have only been allowed to be home for 2 days versus five without missing any school. So we left that morning and we met them in Anchorage. We got a call on Thanksgiving Day that our dogs were missing. They're loose. One is an 11-year-old Airedale. The other one is a 5.5-year-old miniature American Eskimo. And we had we hoped that they had not been killed by wolves, although that had been a fear of mine since my dad's dog had been killed below the hill in 97. We'd hoped that maybe the big dog was in a trap and the little dog was with them, and our house sitters went to find them, and it was shortly after Thanksgiving dinner that we got a call from our house sitters. And they had told us that the two kill sites had been found on opposite sides of our yard. The little dog probably didn't take very long for the little dog, because she's very, very tiny. And she was probably fooled. It was a pack of eight or nine that came into the place and separated. And the little dog went down the driveway, probably thinking they were dogs. The other pack came out of the woods on the other side by our new cabin. The Airedale was 11 years old, knew what wolves were, and he went charging across the yard. He was taken down by the wood pile. He was drugged out through the woods, and his drag trail was still evident when we got home, and he was taken back out into a cat trail behind our house, where there was a lot more activity and a lot more sign of blood and bits of hair. I grew up on Harris Hill on our property. I grew up before there was a road out there. I grew up before the grass population swelled and then decreased, and wolves in our yards were not something that we ever worried about. We used to walk 5 miles through the woods into town to go to school. We never worried about those kinds of things. I want to tell you now as a person how that has affected me. My husband had to set snares in our yard because we know that the pattern of wolves are that they will return to their kill site. I'm 40 years old, and this is the first time that I've ever seen it in my life. It's also the first time that I will tell you as a person that I don't go very far from the house because I don't pack a weapon, and I don't take the new dog very far either without thinking about what happens when you have maybe a pack of eight or nine that come down the road that are hungry. And I just really do not feel very safe anymore. And I think that with the wolf implementation control plan that was there in 1995, our wolves would be eating better. Somebody had implemented a plan, and we wouldn't be here telling you about our health and safety concerns and about a moose herd that's on the verge of extinction and about people that are not eating. And we wouldn't have had to take this into a political arena, because this really belongs in a biological arena, and it's been proven twice. And yet here we are in this political dialogue. Thank you, Senator Halford.
Thank you for your efforts. Dick Newton.
First, I'd like to thank everyone for inviting us down here. This is quite an honor to be able to testify in front of this committee. I'm from the village of Takotna, and I learned something today from that fish and game guy. In the village of Takotna, McGrath, and Nikolai, we've sterilized more wolves permanently than they did, and it didn't cost the people of the state of Alaska a dime. Nothing. Didn't cost them a thing. And when we finish sterilizing them, that's it. They don't run around and make any more little wolves. That's it. They're all done.
That's a sterilization technique. Familiar with it. It's not in their diet either.
A couple months ago, during the darker part of the winter, we had wolf tracks right in the village, you know. And we have about 30 kids going to school there, and then we got some preschoolers, you know, this kind. And the parents were really concerned that these kids might be jumped on or something while they were going to school. Well, I don't think anybody's heard of a wolf actually attacking a human. I never have. But I've been out there like 26 years now, and I've never seen the conditions that exist right at this very point in time. The The prey population is going down, really down. The predator population has gone really high. There's just wolves everywhere. You know, we've sterilized. I got to change that from killing to sterilize. We've sterilized 7 wolves within a mile of our village. 7 of them. The governor and the commissioner of the Fish and Game have both told us, directly and indirectly, that it's up to the locals to handle this wolf predator thing. Well, I can agree with part of that, but the locals didn't cause this problem, right? The locals didn't cause this problem. This problem started when the administration stopped the land and shoot. I don't think that fair chase enters into this at this point. I think the conditions that exist have to be cleared up somewhere. We need immediate relief from this. And if you think about the rule of thumb, I've heard it several times, is that one moose equals $3,000 out there in your freezer, cutting rat meat. Well, Clinton Goods had 3 kids of his own, and then he assumed the responsibility for 3 more, so that gives him 6 kids in the family. And I have a lot of respect for him for taking over these other 3 kids. But one moose won't feed Clinton, his wife, and 6 kids. It just takes more than that. That village this year, out of 23 families, there was 9 moose harvested. Normally, there's around 20. In 1998, there was 20. I don't know. I'm not a real fan of the Fish and Game, and I have a real problem with this wolf count that they have of 56 wolves in that area. We've sterilized 34 of them. Lucky Egress, an air taxi driver, went from McGrath down the Kuskokwim and up the Swift River to what's the name of that town?
Lyme Village?
Lyme Village, yeah. He counted 21 wolves in one pack on the Swift River and 38 total altogether. So if we killed 34 over, sterilized 34 over here, he's seen 38 on this side. Where does the Fish and Game's 56 come in? I'll tell you one way. How it got here is through these, and it's a count. Wolf count or predator count is a misnomer. It's an estimation. It's not a count. And if you were to sit and talk to one of these biologists and have them explain to you exactly how they make this count, you'd be so confused in 10 minutes that you can see why their count is 56 when it should be 4 or 5 times that amount. And I think that probably that's a more likely number, somewhere between 3 and 5 times the Fish and Game's count. And once they put it down on paper, everybody knows that when you read something, it's got to be the truth, right? Well, when the Fish and Game puts it down there, it's like it's set in concrete. It can't be changed. That guy that was sitting here a while ago, he didn't make that count. He's talking about somebody else's count. And it's just bum, man. It's not even close to what it should be. I better quit before I get too carried away. Thank you.
Senator Lincoln and then Senator Taylor.
Hicks.
Oh, yeah. Sit back down. I have trouble here.
Dick, I'm going to talk real loud, but I know you can hear me.
Yeah, you got a voice like my wife's.
A little bit astonished when they said 56 wolves as well, because 2 years ago when I flew between Holy Cross and Aniak,
It was a moose that was down, and there were 29 wolves in that pack. And we flew around and around, and the pilot counted the wolves there. And it wasn't unusual. But today I spoke on the radio and some of the, on the McGrath radio, and some of the villagers called in and were saying, Georgiana, be sure and let them know that we saw so many wolves, and that between traveling between Stony River, Bethel, Stony River, McGrath, that where we used to see a lot of moose and fewer wolves, now we're seeing many, many wolves and no moose. I would ask you this, Dick, when the fish and game go in and the biologists, do they talk to the locals about what the locals see day in and day out? Do you think that they utilize the beautiful historical information that you all have?
No, they don't. And I, furthermore, George, I don't think there's anybody in the world that knows my trapping area better than I do, biologists or 10 biologists. I know my area better than anybody. I've been trapping there for 25 years. I don't have to flag no traps. I know where every one of them was. They've been in the same spot for 25 years. And I hunt in the same area, so I know the game in that area. And right now the moose are, what moose are left are in little pockets, you know, on a big island or a sandbar or something where there's lots of willows, and they're all right together. They're not scattered out. I don't know. They say animals don't have reasoning power, but I think they do. I think they're together for self-protection from these wolves. But they don't know. In answer to your question, they don't take the advice from the locals.
And one other question that I have, Mr. Chairman, it's a quick question. It was stated, and I was surprised, I think the governor stated it on a radio program, that a lot of the moose are being killed by Bethel people coming out.
Oh, he's right. There was one moose, and I can tell you who it was. It was Stanley Hoffman, a good friend of mine that lived in McGrath forever. He was born and raised in McGrath, and he come up there and went hunting, and he killed one moose.
So you don't agree with that?
Like the governor said, that they've taken 70% of the moose, well, that don't leave a hell of a lot left for us, I'll tell you that.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
I'm still going to report you, though.
Dick, I want to thank you for coming in. I really appreciate it and appreciate very much your honest testimony here today. But I wanted to just notify you of something. You made a statement, and a lot of other people have, too. Never heard of any human being attacked by a wolf.
Yeah, I never have.
Well, Discovery Channel, I'm sitting there bored in a little apartment here in town, you know, during the session. I'm watching this Discovery Channel the other night. Hour-long program. India's got the same wolves we got. The fact is, most of the world has wolves. In India, 2 years ago, 76 children were attacked by wolf packs. 46 of them were killed. They went out and did some lethal predator control to keep their children from being killed. So this philosophy or this old wives' tale about how wolves will not attack people.